Hello and welcome to our talk today about minerals. It's everything you need to know about minerals so that you can make good decisions about what you eat, when to supplement, how to supplement, and if supplementation is a good idea. So I really want to present to you a lot of great information to just empower you to make decisions about your diet and to be able to figure out if possibly you have some mineral deficiencies. So before I begin, I just want to make sure that you're aware that this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's certainly not intended as medical advice. It's intended as a sharing of knowledge and information from my research and clinical experience, and I encourage you to always listen carefully whenever you're getting health advice, whether it's from me or any other practitioners or any other educational sources, and make your own decisions based upon that research and in partnership with your qualified healthcare professional. If you're under the care of someone, if you're on any medication, if you have any diagnosed conditions, just make sure that you bounce this education by that person and together you make a conscientious decision about what to do with it. So let's just jump right in and get started. What exactly are minerals? We hear about them all the time, right? You hear, got to get enough calcium, got to get enough iron, chromium. All of these things are minerals. But what really are they? So they're actually catalysts. And catalyst means something that pushes something, makes something go faster, accelerates the progress. And it basically keeps the battery going and lets it hold its charge within your body. They compose about 40% of the human body mass, and much of that is actually in your bones. We can't produce minerals. They're actually just things that are found in nature. And we'll look in a second at the periodic table of the elements, where all the essential minerals that we need for our body to process are found. So we can't produce them, so we have to be getting them through food. And we should be getting them on a regular basis. Fortunately, we can store minerals in the body, so if we miss a day or two here and there of getting adequate mineral nutriture, as long as you're getting it and it balances out over time, you're going to be okay. Unlike some of the vitamins, like the water-soluble ones, where we just don't really store much in our bodies. They really come from the earth. They are products of the earth. They are things found in the earth, but they are essential for our growth, reproduction, hormone balance, and function. Big problem is that some of the soils, a lot of our soils are depleted. Over the years of using modern agricultural techniques and using a lot of pesticides and herbicides and not really giving back to the soil, not using artificial fertilizers, but not really giving back to the soil what they really need. Really good soil is about 40% minerals. Our depleted soils are not. So since our land vegetables, our land foods are very much depleted in minerals, a lot of a good reliable source are sea vegetables because they come from the oceans and the oceans are abundant in minerals. So let's take a look. This is what's called the periodic table of the elements, and I'm not going to take you back to high school chemistry class and start getting you bored and all that stuff about valences and neutrons and electrons and protons and all that stuff, but suffice it to say that stuff you learned back in school, if the teachers really were on it, they would have related the things you were learning when you were learning chemistry from the table back to your body. All of our essential mineral nutrients are on this chart. Now, not every one of the elements that are on the periodic table are essential to life, to our human being to consume, but all of the ones that we need to consume are here. So you can see some of these like zinc and copper and cobalt and iron and manganese and chromium, molybdenum. They're all here. Iodine, including some of the toxics as well, aluminum, fluoride, chlorine, bromide. So there's a lot of things on this chart that we need and a lot of things that we don't. Well, the purpose here is not to get you all entwined with chemistry, but to really just have you see that the way that nature and what we need unfold. So I wanted to show you some charts that I thought are fun. This is actually a picture of something I have hanging on the wall in my kitchen. It's called the periodic table of the vegetables. And it's for every one of these nutrients or mineral or elements that are on the table has a picture of a vegetable. So here's zinc, and it's got a zucchini, right? Not all of them. Here's copper, and it has a cucumber. So it's tried to be very similar, you know, in terms of the lettering. And it's kind of it's just fun to have around, right? So there's also a periodic table of the fruits and nuts. And they're fun to have around. I highly recommend you just go Google search them and find them and order some of these charts for fun. Minerals are essential nutrients, but they're needed in very small amounts to keep us healthy. They don't give us energy, they don't give us calories, but they help us to generate energy and to use our calories because they're cofactor in a lot of reactions in the body. They help with a lot of different functions. We don't make minerals. In order to meet our daily needs, we must obtain them through the diet. And processed food diets have been stripped of minerals. Our soils are depleted of minerals. So if we're eating a processed food diet, it's very likely that we're deficient in minerals and serious symptoms can occur. So if you're suffering from fatigue, hormone imbalances, digestive issues, mineral imbalance can be at the heart of that. And it's really super important to be replenishing your minerals on a daily basis through food, and when you can't get them all through food, through supplements. So there's two categories of the minerals that we need. The macro minerals, where we need in large amounts, usually measured in milligrams, hundreds of milligrams, calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, sodium, potassium, chloride, and sulfur. And we get these and need these in larger amounts. But then we have the micro minerals that we need in smaller amounts. Usually they're measured in micrograms, MCG, or small numbers of milligrams, like in the double digits. Iron, for example, has a recommended daily allowance of somewhere in the neighborhood of 30, and zinc is somewhere in the neighborhood of 20, and manganese is in the micrograms, chromium micrograms, etc. So we have iron, zinc, manganese, chromium, molybdenum, copper, iodine, cobalt, fluorine, and selenium. These are the ones, the major ones that we know we need. There's something like 90 different minerals that have been identified as being active in metabolic processes in the body. So it's really important that you're getting good food forms of these minerals every day. So what are some of the functions of minerals? Why are they so important? Well, they act as cofactors for enzyme reactions in the body. That means that without these minerals, those enzyme reactions are going to be very slow and sluggish, and so much to the point where it's going to impact the functioning of the body. They help us maintain pH balance. So the alkaline minerals like calcium, magnesium, and phosphorus, and potassium all help to keep our pH in the more alkaline range. They facilitate the transfer of nutrients across the cell membranes. A lot of times they're carriers, like sodium and potassium, are carriers of nutrients from the gut into the cells and then into the bloodstream and then into the tissues. They help to maintain proper nerve conduction, so the movement of a signal from your brain to your fingers so that they move and grab, and from your brain to your mouth so it can speak, and all the other parts of the body maintain proper nerve conduction. And when we don't have the right amount of minerals, we can sometimes see sluggishness of those functions, sluggishness of the nerve reactions, sluggishness of the ability to think, to remember, to move. They help to contract and relax muscles. The major ones involved there are calcium, magnesium, potassium. And when we're deficient, we can get cramps or we can get weakness. And it's important to have the right amounts of these. So if you start to wake up in the middle of the night with your legs cramping, like Charlie horses, we call them, that is a sign that you might be deficient in, say, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium, mainly potassium and magnesium. They help to regulate tissue growth and repair. So as the skeleton is growing, as the muscles are growing, as a child is growing, as a baby is growing in utero, minerals are very important to regulate tissue growth. And finally, structural and functional support. So structural support, meaning the bones, the ligaments, the tendons. Our bones are the biggest source of stored minerals in the body. And most people think about calcium when it comes to bones. But there's so much more than just calcium. What else do we need to know? We need to know how to tell if you're deficient. And there are some telltale signs and symptoms. And we've got some questionnaires that you can fill out to determine if you're deficient in any minerals. And those I highly recommend that you complete. What happens if you take too much? Well, there are some that if you have too much, you're in excess. In one regard, it could be because it throws off the delicate balance, like too much calcium with relationship to magnesium could lead to muscle cramping because calcium contracts, magnesium relaxes in a broad sense. Right? Copper and zinc can throw each other off. Too much copper can deplete zinc and vice versa. And some of the minerals, when they get in excess, can actually cause damaging symptoms or deposition in parts of the body. We need to know how to choose the best food sources. And I'm going to give you some resources for where you can find detailed lists. When to supplement, how to choose the supplement, and how to make sure that there's no bad stuff in your supplements. You know, you go to Walgreens or some of the cheap pharmacies, they make their minerals and their supplements in a very inexpensive, cheap way, and it hinders the absorption. So you may be spending less money on those supplements, but you're also getting a whole lot less in, and you're getting some dangerous excipients. And then there's factors that hinder or help the absorption of your minerals. So here's a chart, just a general cheat sheet chart of just the major functions of some of the minerals, the major minerals. It's not complete. You can go online and look this up and study each mineral if you really want to, if that's part of your passion. But I've given you general and the general actions, a handful of the actions of those minerals. So we'll review those for a little bit, and then we're going to look at foods and food sources because that's a really important piece of this. So calcium is important for what? Strong bones and teeth and muscle contraction. You know, the RDA here in the U.S. is considered to be around 1,000 milligrams, which is considered to be high, and it keeps getting raised because excess protein pulls calcium out of the body. And we tend as a society here in the West to have very high protein diets. So 1,000 milligrams is considered an issue. And if you don't have enough, the deficiency is called osteoporosis or osteomalacia, osteopenia. And you can get tetany, which is hypercontraction of the muscles. So it's really important to have the right amount of calcium. And, you know, in countries where they don't get as much protein, they don't eat as much animal protein, they're in good calcium balance with about 500 milligrams. Chloride's another one. And it's involved in enzyme activation in the body, the proper pH, the proper stomach acid. It's part of the HCl, hydrochloric acid. And it comes in the body in combination with sodium, usually sodium chloride, although it can come combined with potassium as well. Somewhere between 1.8 and 2.3 grams a day. That's a huge amount that we need and that we take in. Same thing with sodium. We take in a lot, and the RDA that you need is a lot. When you have a deficiency, you can get loss of appetite, weakness, lethargy, and acidosis. Magnesium, super important for nerve impulses, for protein synthesis, for muscle relaxation. And there's 325 enzymes in the body that rely on magnesium. So it's what we call ubiquitous throughout the body. It's important for so much. The average recommended amount ideally is 350 to 400 milligrams a day. Some people need a lot more depending on what's going on in their system. I've had people take as much as 1,500 to 2,000, and there's ways to tell if you're getting too much because if you do, you end up with getting diarrhea. Things that can happen when you have not enough would be neuromuscular hyperexcitability, which would be muscle cramping, muscle weakness, and cardiovascular disease, very much linked to the cardiovascular system. Phosphorus is a component of bone and also of phospholipids, which are really important in the brain for memory and nerve transmission, for ATP production, which is energy, adenosyl triphosphate, the energy currency of the cell, and for regulation of pH. Around 700 milligrams, and it's involved in neuromuscular issues, skeletal issues, and heart symptoms when there's a deficiency. Potassium, it's one of the major electrolytes. It's involved with water balance, fluid balance, maintaining the proper fluid balance on the inside and the outside of the cells, electrolyte balance, and pH balance. Around 4.7 grams a day, a lot of potassium is needed. Weakness, apathy, arrhythmias, fragile bones can all result from a lack of potassium. And when you're in a state of adrenal fatigue, the sodium and potassium balance gets off because we tend to pee away a lot of our sodium. Sodium is important, again, very similar to potassium, and also in combination with chloride. They usually come in together, sodium chloride. Water, pH and electrolyte balance, nerve transmission, and muscle contraction. We need, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,900 milligrams a day. Some say to go can go up to as much as 2,300. Without it, we end up with anorexia, nausea, muscle atrophy, and weight loss. Sulfur. Most people get too much sodium, by the way. They get in the area of 4 to 5 grams a day, which is way too much, and it can create a problem that way, too. Sulfur is another important one, and it's part of the sulfur-containing vitamins and lipoic acid. It's also part of some of the structural tissues in the body, important for detoxification. 800 to 1,000 milligrams a day, and without it, we don't have efficient detoxification. It's part of things like glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, MSM are all sulfur-containing compounds that are important for detoxification. And it's also important for methylation, which is part of DNA repair, and it's an important process in the body. Chromium. Its main claim to fame is blood sugar balance, helps you prevent insulin resistance. 25 to 35 micrograms is considered the recommended dose, and when you go low, you can get insulin resistance and diabetes. And the therapeutic doses that we usually give with someone when they already have insulin resistance or difficulty with blood sugar balance is somewhere in the 800 micrograms a day for a while, until they get their levels up to speed and then get the diet changed so they're not draining their chromium so much. Copper's important for neurotransmitter synthesis and some of the pigmentation in the body. And about 900 micrograms a day is important. Without it, you can get anemia, neutropenia, and bone irregularities. But too much copper can deplete zinc. Iodine is another important one, mainly for thyroid balance and breast health, also for protecting tissue from fibroids forming from fibrosis, like uterine fibroids. About 150 micrograms is considered the dose. Without enough iodine, we get thyroid dysfunction, increased blood lipids, breast tissue, fibrocystic breasts, fibroids in the uterus. And the thing about iodine is that when it's low, it can take a lot to bring the level up because it's really a hard one to absorb. So some people do need a lot of iodine, at least temporarily, to restore their levels, especially when they've had chronic thyroid imbalance. And there are tests you can do for it. Iron, super important for the oxygen-carrying capacity of the blood. It's part of hemoglobin. And without it, you can get anemia, which would present itself as fatigue and palpitations and weakness. The range is around 8 to 18 milligrams a day. But like every other mineral, when there's a deficiency, it's important to bring the levels up by using larger doses. Manganese is very important for the repair and the integrity of collagen tissue, brain, and glucose metabolism. It's about 2.3 milligrams a day, so quite a small amount. And without it, you can have impaired growth and slow repair and slow wound healing, especially if there's been like a car accident or some sort of a musculoskeletal injury, sprain, strain. Having extra dose of magnesium is really important for collagen repair. Molybdenum, important for purine synthesis, which is part of DNA, and then pyrimidines and taurines and aldehydes. These are all chemicals in the body that are very important in a variety of functions in terms of energy and repair. And the elimination of excess sulfur. So when molybdenum goes low, it's harder for the body to excrete extra ammonia, which ammonia is produced as part of our metabolic process, but we can get a buildup of that ammonia in the blood, which can lead to fatigue. And about 2.3 milligrams a day, we can often use it when people have genetic impairment in their sulfur metabolism. Sorry, it's 45 micrograms a day, very tiny amount. So selenium, important in free radical protection. It's part of the whole glutathione thing. And it also helps to convert T4, the inactive form of the thyroid hormone, to T3, the active form. Very important in here. And what people don't realize is it's one of the few nutrients that we have a food source that can meet 100% of our RDA in one little piece. It's a nut called the Brazil nut. One Brazil nut is more than our needed amount of selenium in a day. 55 micrograms is all we really need. Without enough selenium, you can get myopathy, which is pathology in the muscle, loss of cell strength, so you get cell fragility, degeneration of the pancreas, and of course, low metabolic function because of the lack of conversion of T4 to T3. We have silica, which is important for bones and teeth and hair and nails. And we find that we can take very high silica herbs like horsetail to help restore the hair and the nails and the strength of those things. We only need about between 9 and 14 milligrams a day. Without it, though, we can get osteoporosis, weak skin and nails and brittle hair, hair that falls out, nails that break. Finally, we'll talk about zinc, which is important for energy and protein synthesis and sex hormones and digestion and again, hundreds of different reactions in the body rely on zinc. Stomach acid, there's so much that relies on zinc. It's very important for the immune system. 11 milligrams is what we need of zinc, and it can lead to poor wound healing, anorexia, hormone imbalance, immune system impairment, sex hormone problems, all kinds of hormone imbalances. So zinc is a super important one. Taste, the sense of taste. But what are some of the general mineral deficiency signs? Well, hormone imbalance, we've talked about that. It could be glucose irregularities. It could be adrenals or thyroid or sex hormones. Minerals are involved in all of those functions. Fatigue certainly is a problem with so many of them because they're involved in energy metabolism and ATP and metabolic rate through thyroid control. Osteoporosis, in particular, the ones that have an issue with structural integrity, which are a lot. It's not just calcium and magnesium. There's strontium and there's boron and there's so many nutrients and minerals that go into making strong bones. Anemia, different types of anemia, iron deficiency anemia in particular, but a deficiency of anemia can come from copper deficiency as well as some of the B vitamins. A digestive upset, we can have low hydrochloric acid, right? We can have contraction of the digestive system, irritable bowel that can come about from lack of magnesium. We have immune system problems, the inability of the body to make macrophages and to make antibodies and fight against disease because of like zinc and some of the others that are involved in the immune system. We get allergies, because of the inability of the body to control the production of histamine. You can get depression because of the involvement of minerals on nerve conduction. We can get anxiety, again, because of the involvement with neurotransmitter synthesis and nerve conduction. We have skin problems. Zinc is very much associated with problems with skin, like poor wound healing. You have neuropathies, pathologies of the nerve, the peripheral neuropathies where the nerves are damaged because there's something going on there that can be related to mineral deficiency. And finally, inflammation. There's a lot of minerals involved in the inflammatory cascades, like the conversion of our short-chain fatty acids to our long-chain fatty acids, particularly zinc and magnesium and manganese and copper. So lots of things. So how do you get your minerals? Yeah, we could go on for days and we can go for an hour about each of these in terms of talking about where to get them and what foods are great sources. But what I've done is put together a list here. And this is from a site called whfoods.com. They don't have a page for each individual minerals. They don't have some of the lesser ones, but the main ones they do have. And all you need to do is click on these links and that'll take you to a page where they have some food charts. They have a little summary chart, and then you can click on a link and it takes you to a more detailed chart of all the foods that are high in these nutrients. And there's also some other links, the USDA official chart, where you can go in and you can just put the nutrient in that you're looking for, and it'll give you a list of foods sorted by the most to the least. Now, you have to realize when you look at those charts that they don't just include real food. They include a lot of the processed crap that you get in boxes, you know, things that we wouldn't recommend that you eat. So you have to sort through it. I think they may give you the ability to look and search on Whole Foods. There's also charts here at these nutrient charts here. The DeCoupere, it's a chiropractor site, but he has a really nice nutrient lookup charts. Some of the nicest, easiest ones I've seen, and you can download them as PDFs and create yourself a little list. So what I recommend that you do is that you take the assessments that we've given you, and there's one for vitamins and one for minerals, and there's little sections for each of the vitamins and minerals, and just answer those questions, and you'll get scores for each of them. And start with the ones that have the highest score, which means you're most efficient in those, and look them up in these nutrient charts, and just start making a point of eating enough of these on a regular basis. Now, a good insurance policy against mineral deficiency is to include sea vegetables on a regular basis. I like to make sea vegetable salads and throw them in my smoothies and put them in salad dressings and make soups with them. And they're a really good source of a lot of these nutrients. So it's a really easy way to go about and get it. Greens are very high in these things. So drinking green juices, green smoothies, green sauces. What happens when you can't get it all from food? Remember, we talked about the soils being depleted, and it's very important to eat organic foods and non-GMO foods. But in reality, it's sometimes good to take supplements as an insurance company. Policy, not a company. I take a liquid mineral supplement that's got a lot of everything, and then I take some individual ones. I take them not every day, a few times a week. But if you're finding that you're deficient, you want to take them every day for a while. I just take them as an insurance policy just because I know the soils are depleted, and especially on days when I'm traveling and I may not get as much of these in my body as I do when I'm home. So you want to take it for an insurance for an already healthy diet, not to make up for deficiencies. And like, oh, I'm just going to eat a deficient diet and I'll just take a supplement. No, it doesn't work that way because there's so much else in the foods that we don't know about. You know, we're always discovering new nutrients, you know, whether they be vitamins or minerals or just antioxidants that we find to be necessary. So don't play with nature. Just use them, but use them as an insurance for an already healthy diet. When you have symptoms of deficiency, in conjunction with also changing the diet, taking supplements can be good because otherwise to take the amount you may need to replenish your stores could take a lot longer with just food. The food is great for maintaining as long as you have high nutrient-dense organic food, but for fulfilling, I think it's a good idea to take supplements. Under adverse conditions that increase your need for specific minerals, like if you're exposed to or have a cold or a flu or people in your environment are all getting sick, you've had an injury, you know, a sprained ankle, a broken bone, time for extras, but not as a substitute for eating well and not to make up for deliberate binges. Like, I'm going to go out and, you know, binge on all this crap food for a week and then I'm just going to take some minerals to make up for it. Not a great idea. So there's a lot of different ways that you can supplement. Some are better than others. So I've put together what I believe is my hierarchy of supplementation. You start with whole food concentrates. And so these are, you know, green powders and mushroom powders and certain food powders that are very concentrated in much larger amounts that you would normally be able to eat so that they concentrate certain nutrients. Those are great. Liquid minerals from concentrated whole food sources, again, those are really good. They're extracted. They may be juices that are extracted out or just liquid extracts. Then ionic liquid minerals. And ionic minerals are in a state where they get easily into the tissue. They're not in a stable state. They're in an unstable state. So they're electrons. They have extra electrons or more electrons. So they're ionic state and they get into the tissues much more easily. Powders that can be dissolved in water or green juice are good. They can get absorbed pretty easily. Once we get into capsules, it's a little bit harder because the body has to break down the cellulose capsule. And if there's any kind of coatings put on it to help the capsule slide through the machinery, then they're going to be impairing the absorption of those even more. So I prefer that you get them without excipients, and we'll show you what some of those excipients are to avoid. The forms that usually are good are amino acid chelates. They're chelated with an amino acid, or organic salts. So things that there's an extra compound there that's an organic piece that the body can take off. And then tablets, if you're going to use tablets, make sure they don't have binders and preservatives because they're going to be they're not going to be well absorbed. And then anything else is just really not acceptable. So what are the ingredients to avoid in all your supplements? I really do see these in a lot of the over-the-counter stuff that they sell at the chain pharmacy type stores. So I would avoid these and really read your labels. Get really discriminating. We don't want vitamins that look like these pictures with the bright colors. It's all artificial colors in there. FD&C colors have been shown to be carcinogenic. So I would just stay away from anything that has color. Why do you need it to be colored? You know, it's like, it's not like it's candy or it's not like it's a decoration. It's going in your mouth. You shouldn't have to have pretty colors. Hydrogenated oils, I find those in a lot of them. They put them in because it makes it easier to flow the materials through the machinery. Talc, same reason. It just makes it easier for the machinery to work. Sugar, don't know why they put sugar in, because who cares if you're not going to taste them, but they'll put them in some of the liquid and the powdered ones. But you know, why would you need that in a capsule? Artificial sweeteners, that's again as bad as sugar or worse than sugar. FD&C colors, we don't need them to be colors. Stearates, you might see vegetable stearate or magnesium stearate, and that's actually a fatty acid. It's actually a hydrogenated fatty acid that is put inside the materials and also coating the outside of the capsules to make them slide through the machinery better. So it cuts the cost for the manufacturer, but it adds an extra questionable ingredient to it. We've seen sodium benzoate in a lot of the supplements that are liquid, and when you take sodium benzoate and you combine it with vitamin C, you get the formation of benzene, which is a very potent carcinogen. And then there's titanium dioxide, which, you know, is questionable whether it's really bad, but it's just not a desirable additive. You try to get the companies that make really good ones. And we've given you access to our Health Healing Kitchen guide, and the various programs all have supplement guides, and I give you lists and labels of the supplement companies that I trust. So what about magnesium stearate? There's a lot of controversy. Some of the companies say, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. And other companies say, no, you know, we won't use it. It's the companies are using it just to make a cheaper vitamin. So it's a lubricant. So the vitamins don't stick to one another in the equipment. When I spoke to a representative from one of the companies that don't do them, they say, yeah, they have to stop and let the machinery cool down and clean it much more frequently than if they used the stearates, which everything would slide through. The safety is controversial. It definitely can impair absorption of the nutrients, especially if someone has some fat digesting problems, because it's introducing a fatty component. So if somebody has a gallbladder issue or is low in pancreatic lipase, they'd have a problem with it. There are studies that link it to creating a suppressed immune system. So some say it can cause cancer. Some of the companies that don't use it are very blatant about saying it's a poison. I haven't seen any of the evidence that it's really super bad, and it may be out there. I just haven't come across it yet, and I do avoid this as much as I possibly can. But there is no like concrete evidence that it's bad in terms of dangerous, and it may be, but there's definitely evidence that it slows down the absorption. There are some studies that show that it will create a biofilm in the body that blocks the absorption of not just what's in there, but other needed nutrients. So as best you can, I would stay away from it. How do you test mineral status? Well, there's symptoms that can be observed and recorded on questionnaires, and that's something that we've given you access to. So I highly recommend that you take those questionnaires. Those are objective, but usually they're pretty good at detecting whether you have a mineral imbalance. Exam findings are certain things, and we've given you access to a physical exam where you can, you know, look at your body and look for signs and symptoms of mineral imbalances. Taste testing is a good way to do it. Lab testing, there's direct measurement. Many of the minerals don't test well in direct measurement in the blood just because, some of them just, they don't store in the blood. They're stored in tissues. So a lot of the lab companies that do test minerals will look for it in the white blood cells or things like that. There's some people who do hair analysis for minerals. I haven't seen any real good evidence that it's 100% accurate, so I don't do it very much. Perhaps that there's some missing data that I haven't seen that would direct me there. Generally, the way I test is functionally by certain like taste tests. I'll do a zinc taste test. There's other minerals you can do a taste test for, and I'll look at the body for signs of mineral deficiency. And functional tests like an organic acid test, for example, which will show impairments of metabolic pathways when there's certain nutrients that are missing. So here's some functional tests for mineral status. Something called the mean corpuscular volume, which is on your standard CBC test, is a measurement for iron. Fe is iron. Total iron binding capacity, iron. The uric acid can be an indirect measure of the level of molybdenum and copper in the body. Hemoglobin, related to iron. Ferritin is a storage form of iron, so related to iron. Something called GGT. And that's a liver enzyme. Low in that can be magnesium issue. Alkaline phosphatase, low in that can be related to a zinc deficiency. And then there's a test called the organic acids test, which can actually test for just about all the minerals in a functional way. And that test can be run through a company called Genova or Metametrics and also Great Plains Labs. There's another test called NutriVal that's run by Genova Metametrics, and they look at the white blood cells and the red blood cells, and they try to look in the various components that studies have shown to be directly related to mineral imbalance. And finally, there's SpectraCell, which looks at the white blood cells. The testing can be expensive. Organic acids can run around $300. The NutriVal is around $500 and the SpectraCell is $600. So I usually start with just looking at the standard blood test and then looking at the signs and symptoms through our questionnaires and then getting people on a good whole foods diet with lots of mineral-rich foods like your greens and your sea vegetables. Get you on some good, maybe an overall liquid mineral, and then supplement the ones that are showing to be low. And then if we're not making the progress that we think we should, then we can go ahead and test the minerals more directly in those more expensive ways. But most people don't want to spend that kind of money unless it's absolutely necessary. I like to use these taste tests for minerals. I've been using these for like 25 years. There are controversies. Some people say they don't work. But the company that did this Body Bio Kit, they did a lot of studies. They did thousands and thousands of cases where they measured for specific signs of nutrient imbalances in functional areas. Then they measured it against these taste tests. and there was accuracy, and then they supplemented to return the body function to normal, so those signs were no longer there, and then retested the taste assays and found that there is correlation. And it wasn't until they've done tens of thousands of these before they would say that that particular mineral can be tested. So I've used these test kits. They're fairly inexpensive. You can purchase them in a place called Emerson Ecologics. But if you just look up bodybio.com, you'll find them there. It's pretty simple and easy to find. The company called Premier Research has just the zinc, and a lot of other companies have it, the Thorn and Biotics, and it's just for the testing of the zinc. You can also test the stool for toxic metals, and you can test the urine for toxic and essentials. And there, you know, some of them are really good indicators in the urine, and some of them are not. And then the lingual testing, like I said. There are blood tests for mineral status that are accurate: the iron, the calcium, the potassium, the sodium, the chloride, the phosphorus, magnesium, and copper. Magnesium should be in the red blood cells, not in the serum, though. Calcium is a good indicator of calcium functionally, but not so much bone levels of calcium, because if you've got osteoporosis, generally your calcium level is not going to go down. There are other reasons for your calcium level shifting. Body's really careful about maintaining blood levels of calcium within a tight range because it's so important for cardiac function. And then there's some references for you if you want to go deeper with the minerals. What I recommend for you to do is to take the tests, figure out which of the minerals you're low in, you know, pick the top 3 to 5. If there's more than that, I would recommend that you start with some kind of big multi-mineral and then supplement the ones that are most deficient, and then you can move on. I mean, it gets to be a little bit tedious if you're having to supplement with 10 or 12 nutrients. And if you're really low on most of your minerals, my suggestion is that you up your level of food sources and look at your stomach acid, because most likely you have low stomach acid, and stomach acid is really important for the processing of your minerals. So this concludes our mineral presentation. I would like you to just go out there, test your minerals, and then start making a point of eating those foods that are high and supplementing with the ones that you tend to be low in. This is Dr. Rita Marie. Bye for now.